Strongway, where we talk about how writing works, how writers work, and why the best writers risk being strange. And today I've got a guest, Alanis Dirk-Lussier, who is going to talk, I read this article in the Uniter recently that Elena had written, and it was about quitting her job and going into basically self-employment. And sort of trying to do these creative projects, doing the things that everyone, I think a lot of people have this experience of you quit your job, you kind of start doing the thing that you were, hoping you would ever be in the position to do. And then it's strangely difficult, and strangely isolating. You had an interesting moment in here where it says, sitting in my home office day in and day out, working on projects that might never see the light of day and that no one knew I was working on, I felt like I was living in a bubble of my own making where no one could see or hear me. And I remember reading that and thinking, it really reminds me when I was a student doing my PhD, because I was on a scholarship and I was, in this kind of interesting, very lucky position where I was basically pulling a decent salary to write a novel, which was my creative PhD thesis at the time. And I would go for days just in my apartment. I remember once leaving the apartment and going to the bookstore, and I went to buy a book, and I went to the till, and I went to hey, I'll buy this book. And my voice, I could barely say the words, because I realized I hadn't spoken a word for 2 days. It was just this weird, thing where it's I just wasn't used to the isolation of it. And it was a very kind of small scale version of what you were talking about in some ways. But I think a lot of people have this weird trajectory where they don't really understand what being self-employed is. You also note in the article, not only you had to create your own work, but your own workplace. And I think it was an interesting article. So I just want to talk a bit about some of the things you raise in it. And also just about that transitioning into a creative career or a self-employment career coming out of university as you did and so on. There's just a lot of things around there that I think people don't always talk about enough, and that I always kind of when I do talk about them, I find that I'm so often looking at my own experience, which it is a while ago now, and I'm not sure exactly how relevant it still is. Anyways, could you just talk a little bit about kind of where your backstory, in a manner of speaking, where you came out of school or what you went to school for and where you came out and kind of some of the things you did that kind of led you to writing this article?
Absolutely, and thank you for having me. The article was quite vague, I think, in terms of my work. I just wanted to keep it quite open. But I did study creative writing at the University of Winnipeg. And like I mentioned, my first screenwriting class was with you, and now I'm a professional screenwriter. So I just, it's a fun little full circle moment. After my undergrad, I just was just overwhelmed. I had no idea what to do, and I went to grad school immediately thinking that maybe grad school will get me a job. So I went away to Edinburgh in Scotland and had an amazing, amazing time there. And after I graduated from my master's program, I just, once again, just had no idea what to do. I was working in a restaurant as a server and was kind of too tired to write on my time off, too physically tired. I would try to just book all these doubles so I could have multiple days off, but at school, it was write every day. It's a muscle that you have to work, which is extremely true. But when you don't have anything to write for, I found that was very difficult. And I didn't have any deadlines. And I just had to, just create my own work. And at that time, I thought, okay, well, short fiction is the way to go. Short fiction, then you publish your short story collection, and then you get your first book deal. And that's how it goes. So I was writing short stories and not having a lot of success getting them published. But I always, always loved cinema. And I grew up acting, and my mother's a filmmaker, is a documentary filmmaker, who's most recently, she's recently turned to scripted television. So I grew up working on set as a hobby, for fun, just for money, and just always loved cinema and just never thought that it would be a job. So I just had this euphoric, epiphany where I thought, why don't I just meld those two together and go into screenwriting?
Why wouldn't you have thought it would be a job, like if you mm-hmm. see your mother doing it, you know?
I was never interested in making documentary film, but I kind of assumed growing up that everybody loves movies, which I found is not the case. Most people that I know don't watch movies. Like, I truly thought it was normal to just follow all film news. You know, when someone gets a deal, when a film is cast, when they start production, you know, just watching all the behind the scenes, waking up early to listen to watch the Oscars nominations. I thought that was normal behavior. And I kind of realized later that it wasn't. And I did find that screenwriting was just a better fit for my writing style, which is more concise and to the point and a little basic. I always struggled with writing elaborate prose, so screenwriting is a much, much better fit for me.
Like fiction screenwriting rather yes. than documentary mm-hmm. work. Yeah, sure, I see what you're saying. So in some ways you're kind of in seeing this creative career happen, but it's sort of disconnected from maybe what you're exactly into or mm-hmm. or thinking is, you know, a possible route. It's interesting you mentioned the short story to, you know, the novel path. You know, that is very much what that path was in Canada for a long time, and it has really changed, I think, but I don't know that people know, like, how those things have changed. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think what I find so strange when I look at what people talk about online about, you know, starting a career as a writer, like, it's very much that they're talking about what worked in the 90s.
Mm.
And in the 90s there was this period of, you know, sizable advances for first-time writers, which would actually be earned out, or at least could be earned out. And you had, you know, the bestseller list had a certain composition that they don't anymore, and, you know, you had a industry that where you didn't have the options you do now, and it just was a very different industry. And what I find strange is that you kind of have two camps online, it feels like, now, which is people who are talking like it's still the 90s, and then people who are talking like it's today, but they have put themselves in opposition to how things were in the 90s. Mm. So in both sides of the public discourse of it is so weirdly antiquated. Like, either pushing against things that no longer exist, or they're actively pursuing things that no longer exist. And it's such a strange realm. And I'm not sure what, you know, the solution there is exactly. But I imagine it just must be confusing. Like, I know that I'm confused why people talk that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine how confusing it must be for somebody who's going into university or coming out of university. And then a certain side of it, too, I wonder always. And we're just kind of, like, when you... Like, yes, you took my screenwriting course, but, like, not to put you on the spot, but do you feel that it helps you? Or, you know, do you feel that that degree mm-hmm. was useful to you? Like, what ways did you feel like you were getting prepped for an actual career? And what ways do you think you weren't prepped for it? Because mm-hmm. I know that when I went to school, my experience was I luckily realized this during the time I was going to school, but I realized partway through my degrees that I wasn't learning anything I could use,
mm-hmm.
Practically speaking. Like, I was learning a lot of artistic process that I did find useful, and I was learning a lot of literary theory that I did find helpful, but I kind of, it became apparent at a certain point that I really had to supplement everything I was learning with the stuff I should have been learning, like how to... like what copyright law is,
mm-hmm.
or how to, you know, get a client, or how to do my taxes, or, you know, all these things that at no point did anyone ever try to teach me, but it would have been the kind of it would have completed the picture for me, you know, in a way. I just found like it was almost like when I was in school, at least, the attitude of professors who were otherwise great professors and, you know, very helpful, and I felt I learned a lot from them, but they did sort of operate with this attitude that, well, we shouldn't talk about how things work in the industry because that's, you know, not what we're interested in here. We're trying to make good writing, mm-hmm. not, you know, get into like how to make money in a writing industry.
Very romantic.
Yeah, and I don't know if they even meant to do it, but it just sort of like was, the attitude was like, well, our job is this thing, and then there's this other thing out there that you might do after school. But, you know, it was almost sort of seen as not their job. And I always find it frustrating because to me, when I go to university, I expect to be professionalized. And the idea that you would be, basically they were deprofessionalizing me. Like it was very much the attitude in the university at the time that I went to school at least was it's, you know, professionalization is a cancer that is eating the industry apart, you know, and we need to kind of move away from professionalization. And I understand like some of the philosophy of that, but I didn't find it was of a lot of practical use to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure like how your degree stacks up, because again, you're younger than I am. Did you find it was a, like, in what ways did you feel like you were properly prepared to move out of university?
Yeah, and I think writing degrees in terms of their merit are kind of similar to film degrees, right? A lot of that's the big debate. Should you go to film school or not? Most people say just go and start and work on set. And for writing too, I think a lot of the big writers would say you don't need to learn, just go and write. I think for me in that environment, the workshopping was the biggest help, just to be in that environment, because even as a professional writer, like I have a script editor for every project, and then it gets to the producer and broadcaster, so you're getting notes all the time. If you're going to be writing in comedy, you're going to be in, you know, a writing room. So that was a great, great help, having those deadlines and kind of developing just your own writing schedule. But yeah, otherwise, I think the very academic part of it, maybe, I think there's maybe a disconnect in terms of like applying that academic, like, of course, you need to learn about the grades, but there's a huge, huge emphasis on literature, I think, at writing school, which I don't know if that was, yeah, I don't know if that's applicable to a job, I guess.
Yeah, I never wanted to have a job, so it didn't bother me on a certain level, but I was very cognizant of, like, well, if I'm not going to have a job, you know, then it's great that I'm not learning to have a job on a certain level, but if I'm going to do this, I have to then be a business. Like what I realized, I kind of stumbled into a tax. I was at some conference or something once, and I accidentally like walked in the wrong room. And I remember like there was like a panel of about how to do your taxes as a writer. And they had like a accountant on and some other people, and they were talking about different ways, you know, to prep taxes. So stuff I had no interest in whatsoever at the time. But I remember sitting down and just kind of being like paying attention for some reason. I don't know why I did that. I remember I sat down, I was paying attention, I was like, wow, this is exactly what I should be learning. I remember like thinking like, it was so useful. It was the most useful thing I ever learned when I was, you know, in my 20s. And it was something that, you know, I literally had to stumble across it by accident to like discover just this basic information that was, you know, so helpful to my career then and now even, I remember thinking at the time, like, oh, there must be other stuff like this. There must be things that, like, if I'm going to end up doing this, there's, like, ways to make it easier on myself and not harder on myself. And, like, there's practical, because the reality is, whether you like it or not, the Canada Revenue Agency considers you a business, and, you know, you're considered to be a self-employed person. And, you know, you're operating a sole proprietorship. Like, there's all these things that come into play, and, like, if you're not aware of it, it doesn't really matter in the sense that they're aware of it and they will tax you accordingly, and you know, and they will do things. So you can work with it and you can deal with it in a particular manner, or you can be blind to it and oblivious and not really understand what's happening. And, you know, all of a sudden you're surprised by your tax bill, like, and you get into these weird problems. Like, you can end up making more money than you've ever made before and then paying and then keeping no money. You know, like, you can be in this weird, and then you're surprised by that. Like, there's all these ways which you can just make life harder for yourself without realizing it. And I remember thinking, like, at the time, I just was like, there must be other things like this. Like, there must be things where they're not teaching it to me in school, and I understand why, but I need to go out and learn those things myself so I'm not surprised. And so I thought I was, and I kind of translated that to my schooling in the sense that I had an attitude of, you know, I'm just going to figure out what I want to do, and then university is set up a certain way. I'm going to figure out how to use how the university is set up to get, you know, to where I want to go with these other things. And, like, I had some degree of success with it, and then other things I had, you know, problems, and it didn't work out. But I was very mindful of the fact that I wasn't learning everything. And I don't know if that's always the case. Like, I think a lot of times people come out and they're surprised by things. Whereas I kind of realized I had certain holes in my vision, and that I would be, and I didn't know this, I didn't know that. So it's not that I was ready exactly, but I knew that there were still things I had to learn coming out. Whereas I've talked to some other people, maybe this doesn't apply to you, but I've talked to other people where it's like they were kind of surprised by certain things. Like in this article you wrote, you were noted about how you were kind of surprised about this balance of like what you missed from having a job on a certain level, and like having to kind of recreate variations of that. Anyway, I thought it was interesting because as we're sitting here recording this in a studio where I've got, you know, I rent, you know, part of the studio out, and there's other creators in here, you know, and we are working together, you know, in kind of a shared office space. Sometimes we work on projects together, sometimes we work on our own projects. But it is sort of a situation where, you know, I've created a bit of that, you know, workplace environment where, you know, I can be at home just by myself, isolated, doing things, or I can go to, you know, the studio and work on things in collaboration with other people. And that's something like that I know that I had to kind of figure out over time how to make that work. And I'm still, you know, in that process of trying to figure out the best way to do everything. But, you know, I think it's a thing that catches people by surprise often. I don't know. What did you find that was surprising to you when you kind of made your way in the world, as it were?
So I've been going back and forth between employment and self-employment these past few years. But this last few months was kind of the first time that I was self-employed working on my own projects. Because in the past, I was just working as a contractor on other people's projects. But this was the first time that I was just self-generating, really, my own money and my own projects. And, I mean, these articles, these pieces have to be 500 words. It's, like, they're so short. So, like, the focus has to be very, very narrow. And what's missing from that is that I essentially had like a few months of unpaid work, and I was just, but I was working all the time. And I've always, you know, I've always had the ups and downs, but that was like the longest period that I've had without paid work. And I think that's why I was really like, I really wish someone would just call me and just say, you know, I'd love to have you on this project. I was like, oh man, I really, really, need that.
But it's weird because once in a while that'll happen. You know, I've had that happen, right? We were just talking about working for Farpoint Films. I had done some, before we started recording, I had mentioned I'd done some work for them on this, true crime series. That was a situation where I just got a call basically saying, hey, you want to work on this thing? But generally that doesn't happen, right? Like generally, even, you know, if you're very established, it doesn't happen because they assume you're busy with other things.
Oh, yeah. I know. That was a big hit to my ego because I had a lot of people who were like, oh, great. You're going to be available. Perfect. But then nothing came my way. And I ended up just cold calling a lot of people and got work that way.
Which is what you should do.
Yeah.
Right?
Hey, this is what I've done. This is what I'm doing. This is the work I'm looking for. And I got a good writing and directing contract for a show.
Yeah, like, hey, I'm available.
Yeah.
Sometimes people don't realize you're available.
Mm-hmm.
They're not thinking of you. So it blows your ego sometimes to realize people just aren't thinking of you.
Yeah, and especially for writing, I've heard producers say, like, reach out to me every 3 months because we always have something, but we're just not, like, yeah, we'll forget about you, you know?
Yeah, they're busy. They forget. Yeah. They're just caught in the hamster wheel mm-hmm. on a certain level. And, you know, if they have a need, they try to fill the need as fast as they can. And, you know, if you're just not top of mind, it's easy to be forgotten, mm-hmm. you know, because their life's a blur, you know, on a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you've got nothing going on or if you're busy, but, you know, it's just, you know, you're trying to move in this other direction, it becomes a weird thing where it's, you know, you can kind of be working, as you say, you can be working all the time and making no money.
Mm-hmm.
it's very bizarre, and there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's mm-hmm. almost your job on a certain level.
But I dreamt of having that time to work on all of these projects, to work to just develop these, and then I was in it much longer than I wanted to be, and I do really like being able to work on different projects at once and work on my own projects and other people's projects at the same time. So I found that I really like that balance, but it changes all the time. And it's very scary for me anyway, to not even know what 3 months down the line looks like for me. Cause that's like, I'm waiting for all these funding decisions in June. So I don't know what that looks like for me.
Yeah. It is something that I think it takes time to get used to, you know, mm-hmm. especially if you've had a real job, mm-hmm. like quote unquote, and you're used to kind of someone else setting an agenda for you or a plan for you. You know, they've got a plan. You know, if you're working at McDonald's, like, you know what that looks like in 5 years. You know what it looks like in 1 year. You know what it looks like next week. You know, there's a good side of that, you know, on a certain level. But creative work or even just freelance nonfiction work, it can be difficult because you don't... It tends to be feast and famine, you know. Like, I'll have months where I make a year's salary in the month.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll have other months where I don't make any money at all. And I'm just bleeding money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because you're not just not making money, right? You're still spending money.
Yeah.
Like, and then I'll have, you know, years where I make six figures, years where I'm lucky to make five figures. You mm-hmm. know, in the past, I've had that at least. And, you know, there's things you can do to kind of, when you realize that, you know, there's things you can do to kind of prepare for it, you know, like you could save money, you could buy, you know, certain types of stocks, you know, mm-hmm. that pay you dividends. Mm-hmm. You can do all sorts of things to prep that over time and make yourself in a better and better position over time where you're less reliant on inflows and outflows. But it can be really a weird thing because you'll get like these giant checks and then you'll have like no money,
mm-hmm.
you know, for like months after that. Mm-hmm. And it's psychologically strange.
Yeah, and it's hard to even, like, book a vacation or something.
Yep.
My friends are like, what are your plans for the summer? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know how long this money needs to last me right now.
Yeah, and you don't know what your plans are on a weird level. Like, mm-hmm. your plan is nothing. You have no plans.
Yeah.
But you also don't necessarily want to book yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very odd. The vacation thing is something I always argue about with my wife. Mm-hmm. She's like, well, what are you doing, you know, in August? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing in August. You know, nothing. If you look at my calendar, there's nothing in August, you know.
Yeah.
I could be busy every day in August.
Yeah. And my dream has always been to just be fully remote so that I could work from anywhere in the world. So still working towards that, but definitely the Manitoba tax credit keeps me firmly here.
That is a weird thing too, though, like the idea of being remote. So there's like the benefit of you could be fully remote on a certain level. Like there's the potential for that in the way that you don't have if you're a server in a restaurant,
mm-hmm.
right? Like you don't have the potential to be fully remote. And there's like a possible fun and freedom of that. And then there's also like the isolating aspect of it, as you were saying in your article, like, cause you don't have coworkers that you see anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got no one to really, unless you're making appointments, you know, to talk to your friends by Zoom or go across the street and have coffee with someone or something. Like, you kind of have to structure your social life, becomes a job on a weird level that you're also managing.
Yes.
Because it's not natural anymore that you run into people.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, I'm sure you are too. I'm very introverted. I prefer working from home. I prefer being self-employed. But I had to, like, I for my workouts, for example, I do group fitness. And that's like a very small way that I'm with a lot of people and I see familiar faces. So I do that. And yeah, so that's kind of one of the ways. But yeah, the winter... Yeah, winter is always very quiet, I think, in our industry. But it's good. I mean, I learn every year.
We always say that one of the things that you need to get... Well, I once asked Gregory, like, what would you advise somebody who's about to quit their job and try to go full-time?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, first they need to understand there's no money to be made from January to March.
Mm-hmm.
There's no money to be made.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, just be prepared for that and, you know, plan your personal projects then or like line up things for then or whatever. But like, there's all sorts of weird practicalities that you don't realize or don't think of.
Mm-hmm.
You also get in this weird part, like when you start to become more successful, you start to have like weirdly unique problems with that. Like I remember one of the things that started becoming a problem for me when I started making more money was they started to pre-bill me, like tax-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, what they do if you're a freelancer, they hate you if you're a freelancer, if you don't have a job. The banks hate you.
Yep. They don't understand it. Every year the CRA is like, can you explain this income?
Yeah.
And they don't understand arts grants. And I'm like, aren't there other artists that you deal with?
They hate me at the bank. I went there to get a loan for, I was looking into maybe getting a loan for RRSPs, which is like they have this special loan where they can, basically, they are moving money from one location to another. So, like, they're giving you a loan, but all you can do with it is buy investments, like top up your retirement savings account. So, they're literally, like, the bank is moving money from this account to that account. And if they ever want it back, you know, they can just take it. So, it's not a conventional loan, but you still have to go through the whole process, you know. So, I'm, like, trying to apply for this. I'm just, like, wondering, well, is this worth doing, you know?
Because
there's a tax break involved in that. So I was like, well, maybe it's worth doing, maybe it's not. I don't know. I'll go ask them some questions. They're like, yeah, let's just walk through the process of application. And I'm like, all right. You know, but now as soon as I got to apply for it and it's not automatic, I know that it's not going to go well. So like, I remember but they hate me because on paper, I have no job and make no money.
Because
I have a corporation, right, where I do everything through a corporation. So like as an individual person, I have no job and I make no money as far as the bank is concerned. And, you know, they don't know what line to look at for income on the tax thing. And they hate that it's a different amount every year. But then also because I don't have a paycheck in the traditional sense, you know, they can't take my money away from me before they give it to me. So what they start doing in CRA is as you start making more money consistently, they start to pre-tax you. So they'll start to tax, you'll have to prepay an estimated amount of dollars.
Oh.
So then you have this terrible year where you pay taxes for last year and also for next year. So I remember paying $20,000 worth of taxes and I was making like $40,000 at the time. like that year I wasn't making much money.
Yeah.
And then, but then I had to like not just pay my taxes for last year, but also prepay my taxes for next year. And I was like, and you never catch up that year, right? Because now you're prepaying forever. And then they started billing me based on like what I made the year before. So like literally they're pre-taxing me in a year where I'm making, you know, I don't know, $40,000-$50,000. They're taxing me for a year where I made $250,000. And it was just like this, you know, crazy thing. You know, eventually it catches you up, but like it's eventually, right? Like, you know, right now you need to pay your tax bill.
Yeah.
And like things like that, you know, even just like a real weird thing, like, oh, there's going to be a switch they flip and then they're going to start doing this, you know, and all sorts of bizarre happenings can happen. I had a thing this year where the CRA called me, which is never
me too.
Good.
They called me this year. The CRA gives me so much anxiety.
Right.
I cannot tell you.
Yeah. What they did for me is they called me and they said, hey, you know, we need you to start filing GST. And then I said, well, no, I don't need to collect and return GST to you because the money that they were talking, they're like, well, now that you're making X amount of dollars a year, you need to be collecting and remitting GST. And I was like, no, because the money you're talking about, I'm getting from a U.S. Mm-hmm. company. So I'm billing them to U.S. dollars. I'm doing what the CRA calls delivering services to the United States. And because of, you know, all sorts of treaties, I'm not required to collect GST on that. And they go, yes, we agree with you. We do not think you owe us any GST. But what you're currently doing is not collecting GST and not remitting it to us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we agree you don't owe us any money, but what we, you know, that money is not GST exempt. It's just taxed at 0%. So we want you to collect $0 from them.
Oh,
and, like, write them a bill where you collect $0 and then they pay you $0.
Mm-hmm.
And then you file a GST filing every year or four times a year and then pay us $0. And I was like, are you serious? And they're like, yeah, no, this is for real.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, I don't want to do that. Are you forcing me to get a GST number and do this? They mm-hmm. go, well, we're not forcing you.
Mm-hmm.
We're just requiring you to do it.
Oh.
And I remember just thinking, like, this is bizarre. So now I got to pay every year from now on. I could have done it four times a year, but I chose to do it one time.
Mm-hmm.
So now I've got to pay an accountant to file a GST filing every year to say mm-hmm. I owe them no money, which they agree with.
Do you have a good accountant, by the way?
I do, but unfortunately, like, okay. This is what I got to pay
them.
I
got
to pay them to do. They're not the cheapest accountant, but they're quite
good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you get into the madness of it, and, mm-hmm. you know, no one understands what you do. I find, like, that's the, where if I had to boil it down, I feel like, the way I like to phrase it is I say I live like a vampire. Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm doing the opposite of what everyone else is doing.
Yes.
At all times. And so it's kind of, it's like, when I'm free is when other people are busy at work. And
yep.
when I'm, you know, busy at work is when other people are free. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's like I sleep during the day, I'm awake at night. You mm-hmm. know, like, it's that logic. And, you know, if I work, like, I even just caught myself saying the other day, like, I was in some meeting, I was complaining about being in this meeting with this client. And my wife said to me, well, isn't that great? You know, don't you get to bill them for wasting your time? I was like, no, I go, the more I work, the less money I make.
Yeah.
Like, that's a sort of weird... It's not like a normal job, and it's hard to explain it to people. And so there's an isolation, almost a psychological isolation in that,
mm-hmm.
I think. Like, you know, you don't really have as much in common with other people as you are used to having in common with other people in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it just can be weird and, like, isolating because people don't understand what you're talking about.
Absolutely, yes. All of my friends have office jobs, and they're like, what does a director do? Like, what do you do all day? And I also had to... kind of reframe what productivity looks like, because for a long time it looked like words on the page and how many words and how many pages did I write that day. And I think when you get busier and you have more contracts, the reality is meetings, emails, right? In terms of time spent, I spend so much time writing emails that, of course, I'm not paid to do. That's just part of the job. Yeah, so I really had to reframe that because over the summer, I was writing all summer. I had days where I was like, but I didn't write today. So I was unproductive. But that wasn't true at all. And sometimes it was, I get notes from my script editor and I need half a day to just think about it and process it.
Right.
And while I'm thinking about it, I'll go get groceries or I'll go run errands. But I'm still, and then once I'm done, then I'm ready to sit down and do my edits. But that's still work that's being done.
It's very difficult, too, if you live with someone, you know, I find, like, because you'll be sitting there doing nothing, it seems,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's like, but they don't understand that. Like, I'll sit there and stare out the window. One of the reasons I started coming to the studio is because people just wouldn't leave me alone at home. Like,
mm-hmm.
I'd sit there and I'd be just, like, looking at index cards, you know, just staring at them. And then someone would come up to me like, oh, hey, can you go get the,
mm-hmm.
you know, go get some groceries? It's like, no, I'm busy. Like,
yeah.
But it doesn't look like I'm doing anything. And it's not their fault. Like, they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, it looks like I'm not doing anything.
Mm-hmm. I look out the window a lot, too. That's funny.
Well, you know, it's weird because it's like, they even tell you to look at the window. Like, my optometrist tells me that part of my job is I should be looking at things that are far away
mm-hmm.
every 20, 30 minutes.
Absolutely, a minimum 20 feet away.
It's
yep.
bizarre, but, like, you know, it's not the kind of thing you necessarily have to think about if you're, you know, working outside,
mm-hmm.
you know, or whatever. Like, you just don't, it starts to become, like, this very bizarre thing where it's, like, you kind of feel like, I mean, I don't mind it because I'm used to it now. But like, I remember there was like a time period where it's like I was getting really frustrated because it's like, well, no, like, can't you see that I'm working? It's like, but mm-hmm. they can't mm-hmm. see that. So it's not their fault.
Yeah.
It's my fault for living like a vampire.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm just like noise canceling headphones, close the door.
Right. You know, yeah. And it's like, it gets to be though. There's a lot of things that take getting used to because they don't teach it to you in school. And I find that's true for lots of things in life
mm-hmm.
Because school is very much set up to turn you into a factory worker on a certain level. Like I'm talking about public school and private school. Like, and then when you get into university, it's almost the opposite. Like it's structured like, you know, Plato would have structured it back in the day, perhaps, mm-hmm. where it's like it's very formless and it's very, you know, not, you know, connected to an industry in the way that it maybe pretends to be. And there's a good side and a bad side of all those things. But one of the sort of problems you get into very much is, I think, that you kind of don't have a reasonable expectation of what life is going to be like because mm-hmm. you're kind of in a bubble in school. And then there's good things about being in that bubble, but there's also like the weirdness, like there's just the things they don't tell you. It's not like you can get an internship, you know, being a creative writer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can kind of get an internship working. I remember, well, you were talking about film. I got what was not a film degree, but is in many ways the equivalent of a film degree. Because I did English degrees where my minor was film, and I did screenplay thesis for my master's degree, and I was always doing film classes. Sometimes I'd take them as English credit and so on. But one of the things I got into is I realized at a certain point I wasn't learning anything at all about filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I started taking workshops at the Winnipeg Film Group and so forth. So like I found I really had to supplement my university with courses outside the university. You know, it was very and just going to sets. I would just volunteer on mm-hmm. sets, right? And, you know, I was lucky to be able to do that because I didn't have a lot of expenses at the time and I was able to survive pretty cheaply. And I was psychologically, I was fine being broke,
mm-hmm.
you know, but some people aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Some people just can't handle that. They don't know where their rent is coming from next month. It didn't bother me,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, that's not normal.
University, I think, is a very good place to try and fail with low stakes. And I think that's especially true for film school, which I wish I would have gone to just because I think it would have been fun and I would have created a fantastic network of people. But you also hear, you know, they get to try and fail making short films. So for me, when I made my first short was... you know, like I got like $5,000 to make it. So I felt like the stakes were much higher. I felt a lot more pressure to make my first short. But yeah, after my master's degree, when I realized I wanted to work in film, I decided to move back to Winnipeg because it's a great place to have that career. And it wasn't going to happen for me in the UK. So I moved back here. I got a job as a second assistant director and I left a week later. And it was only like a 3 or 4 week gig, and I moved back here for it, and have just kind of bounced around since. But I have also taken so many supplemental classes. So I took the Winnipeg Film Group's Basics of Filmmaking workshop. I had a lot of screenwriting. I just did this like directing intensive. Now I'm moving more into doing like talent labs and things like that.
Yeah, I found myself still taking courses from time mm-hmm. to time, or you know. Seeking out people I can get consulting from almost, mm-hmm. you know, like, and so forth.
We also like learning though.
Right.
Because we're more academically inclined. So we love the environment.
I think that's part of it too. I just always enjoy learning and I was motivated to learn things, you know, which is, you know, it's a benefit, but it also, it can put you in a position where you get, you almost are ruined for choice, you know, on a mm-hmm. certain level. Like it's hard to know when to stop yeah. learning and actually do something.
Yeah,
I know that I'll like I have the tendency to like if I'm interested in trying something I'll read 100 books about it, but mm-hmm. maybe I should just start doing it and see how it goes and fail on it, as you say, and figure it out.
Yeah, I always felt like I could have majored in 12 different subjects because I was interested in so many things. I could have picked anything.
Yeah, I literally could have. Like, yeah. They made me pick one on the form. But I had like three or four options because of the course that I had taken. I could have had like five different things could have been my major. I had to pick like one of six things to be my minor, you know. But that was just based on what I had already taken, because there were so many things that I could double number or whatever. But I remember thinking also, I wish I had known certain things when I was younger that, you know, now I'm kind of feel like I'm catching up even now with it. What do you think you would have told yourself, you know, if you could go back to yourself in that degree, you know, knowing kind of where you're at now, and how could you have made it easier on yourself?
Oof. Yeah, I definitely didn't think, there were a lot of times where I thought, I was essentially told also by a professor, like, hey, maybe like writing is not a career for you. Like, maybe it's not something that you should pursue. Maybe you shouldn't pursue grad school.
Really? And
yeah, but maybe that's true because of the context of at school, it's just so, yeah, just literary fiction or poetry. And I don't think that then those weren't for me. Like, I'm not. So if the kind of, I guess, right options, the career, yeah, the careers that were available, I think, when I was younger, I would have, I don't know. Yeah, I was very, very hard on myself. And it was, so I'm glad that I kept trying. And I'm very, very glad that I have, like, it absolutely just, like, put a fire behind me. But I wish I would have gone into film earlier.
Sure.
Maybe. Yeah. Just because I love it so much.
What was the reason you didn't go into it earlier? Was it just because your mom had done it? And was there some, like, block with that? Or it's just you saw it only as nonfiction, is what people do, and it's not my thing? Or did you just sort of think you just hadn't got around to learning more about it? You were just thinking of yourself as a writer in other ways?
I think so. I think that's what it is. I think I just didn't... Yeah, it just didn't even enter my mind that could be something that I could have a job in. I think I maybe thought more about being a film critic and kind of writing about film, but not really working within the industry.
It's funny because that used to be a job and isn't anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I wonder if it was part of it being in Winnipeg. People have an idea that this isn't a center for film.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways it isn't. But in other ways, it is, you know, and I think a lot of times people still have the attitude that they need to be in Los Angeles or New York or Toronto or Vancouver to be, you know, successful in this in these industries. When really, yes, those are industry centers, but the big downside that people don't talk enough about is how expensive it is to live there. Like, you can live in Vancouver and work all the time and make tons of money and be totally broke.
Yeah, but also you're working as a service provider and you're working maybe more as a technician and less as a creative. And because I just did this directing workshop in Vancouver and they were lamenting the fact that all the productions there, they're just all service providers. They're all American productions that are coming there.
Yeah, whereas in Winnipeg, it's so cheap to live comparatively that you can be here making less money and doing more of your own thing and having more take-home money.
Absolutely. And I think people are shocked to know that, I mean, not only is it my full-time job, but I almost exclusively work in French, in film and television in French in Winnipeg.
Really?
Like, that's how much work there is, you know?
Right, sure. And it's probably... I mean, have you thought about going to Montreal? Like, it's for some people.
That's my next step. That's kind of where I would like to go. But your network is everything, and that's the scary part.
Especially Montreal.
Yeah. So for me, it would be starting my network all over again. And, you know, you have to spend X amount of time before you're resident, before you can apply for grants. But so, yeah, it's a little nerve-wracking. I'm trying to kind of get to a certain, very a comfortable place in my career where I can make that move.
Yeah, it is, I think if I had to tell myself one thing, you know, my younger self, I would say, like, you should just try to have a bit more, pay a bit more attention to what's working and what's not working.
Mm-hmm.
And be a bit less... making decisions because you think that is the right decision,
mm-hmm.
you know, as opposed to, because there's so many ways that the culture can get into your head,
mm-hmm.
or that your preconceptions of what the industry is, you know, might be based on outdated information and you don't realize it yet. You know, even just something as simple as you write about, as you were mentioning before, you know, this idea that you thought, oh, I need people to pick me, you know, people mm-hmm. need to offer me work, you know, but it's like, well, why can't I just cold call people and say, hey, I'm available for this kind of work. And it's like, that works so well. It's unreal how well that works.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as you say, it helps to have, to know that person already,
mm-hmm.
you know, and have a relationship there and like to have, as you say, this network of people and contacts in the industry that you know, but like, you can't even get that network unless you have been doing things.
Yeah.
I always like say like the one big, with one good decision I made when I was younger, in terms of my career was I had this inkling that if I just kept doing things, it would all work out.
Yeah.
You know,
I found that definitely to be true. And I think everything that I've applied for, my hit rate, I want to say at this point is maybe 30%. I maybe receive 30% of the things that I apply for.
That's very
is
good
it?
Though. Statistically, okay. I remember tracking it. When I was young, I tracked it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very consistent about tracking at the mm-hmm. time. I should be back into it, but I've been bad about it lately. But I spend so much of my time just telling people no, and I don't want to do that rather than looking for things just lately.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I remember like I was considered very prolific and very successful in terms of getting things published.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hitting 12%.
Yeah.
That was like my height. It was like 12% of the things I got an acceptance or people said yes.
Mm-hmm.
That was like when it was really going well. And, you know, I'd say like other people I talked to, like, yeah, I knew nobody for the longest time when I was younger, at least, who was, you know, getting even close to like a third or half of their responses were good.
It's very discouraging. I think the mental toughness that you need is. Oof. But then you get things and then you get like three no's
the more you do it too, I mm-hmm. think the more you get into the mindset that, oh, there's nothing personal. It's just, you know,
mm-hmm.
business on a certain level. Like, you know, they would say yes under different conditions, but these are the conditions. So they're saying no.
Yep. And what I've learned over the years too, is that it is never wasted time, because the amount of times that I've applied for something, first of all, a deadline is always great, but then I always develop my project and I get a no, and it's fine because there's going to be something else down the line that comes up and the deadline is next week. And you know what? I have my package is ready to go already because I've already worked on it.
Right. Or even the person who's rejecting you is coming back to you some other time. And it's like, oh, hey, you know, I didn't like that thing, but what about, you got anything like this? You know, I liked one thing about it, you know, like, or sometimes it's even just that you're pleasant to talk to,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's like, they don't want, you know, I remember once advising my daughter when she was going to a job interview. She was really stressed about it. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, one of the things you got to understand is like most of what this job interview is do they want to look at you mm-hmm. and talk to you every day?
Yeah.
Like they've already decided you could do the job.
Yeah.
Or they wouldn't interview you.
Yeah. That's
and now
true.
It's just about like, do they even like your face?
Yeah.
You know, like it sounds weird to say it, but it's like, do I want to look at this person and talk to them, or are they creepy and weird
mm-hmm.
and I don't mm-hmm. like talking to them, you know, like, and that's so much of that is not anything to do with you. It's just like, do they like people with high voices or low voices?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
yeah,
you know, it's just, do they think, do you remind them of their ex? You know,
yeah.
Like it could be anything.
Yeah. And similarly, I would say, just with all the gigs that I've had, it's even, I've had some terrible gigs, terrible jobs. I've not only learned through it every time, but the networking, like I've had people call me 2 years down the line and they've remembered me from a project where I was an assistant production coordinator. Like it's always, and so yeah, would say to my younger self, never, don't burn bridges. Like don't, like the amount of times where I've like been like, I want to do an exit interview and just really give them a piece of my mind. Like, I've really found that just like, just shut up. Like, you know, be just, it's this industry is very small, and just, yeah, don't burn bridges.
It's shockingly small.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To the point where when I, again, you took a class from me, mm-hmm. and I recognized your name in the newspaper recently. I read your article. And I was like, hey, you know, I should get in on the podcast. And then it turns out that you worked in the same building on the same floor like for like a while. You know, like it's such a small, we're in a small city too, mm-hmm. but it's just shocking how small this industry is. Like, it's startling.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, there's a good side of it where if you kind of can, you know, break in some way, shape or form and start to meet people, one, it's easier to meet people than people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
But two, you know, you can really poison the waters for yourself,
yep.
you know, if you aren't being nice to people yep. and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes very little.
Yeah. And, yeah, okay. In any case, where can people find out more about you or learn more about you and what you do if they want to check out your work or hire you or anything?
Sure. Well, they can follow me on Instagram or they can check out my Vimeo where I have a bunch of videos posted. By the end of this year, I'll have a website up and running for sure. Because I think by the end of this year, I'll be able to, I'll have a director's reel and I'll have, just this project that I'm working on. I'll just have a lot more work out there at the end of this year.
So check out the show notes if you're listening and you want to see more what Elena is up to. Thanks so much for talking to me and, you know, kind of sharing your, you know, struggles there and some of your advice. I think it's, you know, useful to people who are especially are kind of trying to get that transition going to sort of see what am I not thinking about. Because, mm-hmm. you know, so much of it I find as the years go on is like, I'm like, oh, I wish I knew that a year ago. Mm-hmm. I wish I knew that 5 years ago. Why didn't someone tell me about this, you know? Why didn't somebody warn me that CRA was going to call me?
you know,
things like of that. You know, I wouldn't be stressed out so much maybe if I knew how incompetent they sometimes mm-hmm. can be, etc.
Yeah, if you work in the industry under, doesn't matter the position, but if you're in the industry and you just keep writing on your own time, yeah, things will happen. It'll happen.
Well, thanks a lot for your words and advice and sharing your, you know, struggles and keep writing the wrong way.
Thank you.